and welcome to episode 15 of the Spooktator podcast. My name is Hayley Stevens, and I'm your host. And joining me for this episode are Alistair Carman.
Hello.
Hi, and Ash Price.
Hello.
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 Now, hi.
Hi, everyone.
Hello. A lot has happened.
Can I just say hello again?
Oh, yes. Hi, Alistair.
Hi.
Hello.
Sorry, let's get on with it.
A lot has happened since we last assembled to record an episode. For example, Ash, you recently ran the first ever Edinburgh Horror Festival. How did that go?
That went fantastically well, actually. We came up with the idea for it back in April, May, and all of us involved in the committee had all done various things in paranormal entertainment and horror entertainment. We just came together and decided we wanted to do something bigger. And that was the Edinburgh Horror Festival. And it ran over 4 days in, I think it was four or five different venues. We had almost 100 different performances of 40 different shows. It was really good. We had some sellout performances. We had people, it was a great buzz. It was just absolutely fantastic. It was a wonderful 4 days and I'm already looking forward to next year.
Oh, so there's going to be another one.
Oh, God, yeah, absolutely. Next year's going to be bigger and better, hopefully.
Oh, brilliant.
Already got plans. I've already designed the poster for next year, actually. I had designed that before this year had gone ahead. I was up at 3 a.m. one morning, and I just thought, well, I could just try some ideas. So we've got the poster for next year's already done.
Good planning in advance there. Well done.
Yeah.
Exactly. I'm ahead of the game there. But it was a great weekend.
Excellent. Now, Alistair, have you been up to anything interesting since we last spoke?
Well, I've been like hiding under the stairs screaming at the American election, and that's about it, really.
Personally, I recently visited the lovely London Fortean Society to deliver a talk. So a big shout out to anybody who's listening, who came along to that talk or who is part of the group. They were absolutely fantastic. I also feel that I should apologise to listeners and also to my fellow hosts for such a large gap between episodes. But last month I had an operation on my ear. I was in the operating theatre for over 5 hours, which is immense. And I was unable to do most things for about a month, including recording or editing the podcast.
Yeah, we've seen the scars. It's horrifying.
I know. It's still really hot. It's still bright red and really in your face. It's horrible.
Well, on your face.
It's not on my face. Well, it's on my head. I don't know. Where does your face end? Because it's behind my ear. Surely that's not my face.
Oh, that's probably your face. Yeah.
Really?
Unless I've made a hideous mistake.
Face ends at ear, I think. It's kind of like it ends where the hair starts. That's a good point. Actually, where does a bald person's face end?
Yeah, bald. Where does... And also, with your hair, where does the fringe end and become hair? Where is that, in the middle of your head, at the top of your forehead?
This is important. I think we should just spend the rest of the podcast talking about this.
Yes. No, absolutely.
I just got some terrible ghost story. I mean, we can do where did your face end instead for the whole night, but yeah.
Well, talking of ghost stories, we are here to do what we do best. And my goodness, do we have some weird stuff to discuss in this episode. For example, America have created a monster that just won't go away. And I'm not talking about the president-elect Donald Trump. HBO recently released a trailer for a documentary titled Beware the Slender Man. And I'm actually quite excited for this. It looks incredible. The trailer is available on our website for listeners who are curious to see it. But essentially, the documentary, which is directed by Irene Taylor Brodsky, follows the real case of two 12-year-old girls from Wisconsin who stabbed a classmate 19 times and left her for dead back in 2014. Now, you'll probably remember this case being in the headlines because they claimed the motive behind their attack was to summon Slenderman, Slenderman being a folklore creature created on a website called Something Awful. Now, it looks like this documentary could be really interesting, and it looks like it features Richard Dawkins, who no doubt will be talking about memes and society. Have you guys seen the trailer?
We've seen the trailer, yes. I've watched it twice now.
Yeah, I've seen it once.
What do you think?
It looks interesting. Is this based on a real case of two girls who killed?
Well, yes, it is.
Yeah. Well, they didn't kill, they left her for dead, but she survived. But their reasoning for attacking her and trying to kill her was because I think they thought that it would make Slender Man appear.
If that was Dawkins' voice on there, and I believe it was, he's talking about how people can be taken in by something that's fake that just because it's been on the internet or spread around as a meme. I mean, that the entire American election was based on it, on people believing fake news. I mean, if you believe fake news, you're going to believe fake ghost stories, fake anything. And that's apparently what's happened on this, that a meme has spread into through people's imagination to think it's real. And it's had near tragic consequences.
Well, people have always kind of thought that these types of things are real. I mean, when you were a kid, do you not recall people saying, if you go to the mirror and say Bloody Mary three times, she'll come out and get you? So obviously this has taken it to the nth degree, but it certainly is, it's something that has been happening for a very, very long time. And it's obviously ended up with catastrophic consequences.
I don't know, though. This is the thing. I think the documentary will probably look into the psychology behind what happened and, you know, maybe the trial. But I kind of question, I mean, when people, I know these are children, and so, you know, it has to be handled very carefully, and you have to be careful what you say, because you don't know, we don't know about the circumstances involved. But I can't remember which serial killer it was now, but there was a serial killer who said that his neighbor's dog told him to kill people. And I often wonder, when people kind of say that there's an agency involved that told them to do something, whether that's just an excuse, if it's them trying to sound notorious. And I really,
maybe he's dyslexic and he really meant God.
But I do wonder if people really think that, you know, they believe in things to that extent, or if they're just convincing themselves and giving themselves an excuse.
Yeah, they have the violent tendencies anyway, and saying that this was a trigger when really they were the trigger themselves.
Yeah, they were just looking for a reason to say, this is why I did it, this is why it was justified.
It almost gives them an attempt to get out of it as well, doesn't it? By saying something else has caused me to do this, almost pleading the insanity case gets them off. I mean, there has been examples of that throughout history, of people claiming that television or stories or films or games has led to people behaving in a certain way. Actually, when we
Nigel Farage,
or soon to possibly be Lord Farage, if the press has anything to go by.
Don't start me screaming again. I've had enough of screaming in the last week.
Let's not even go there. That's too scary for this podcast. I mean, we have to draw a line somewhere. We'll talk about ghosts and demons and witches and anything, but no. Not Farage.
Sith Lord Farage. Arise, Lord Farage.
Interestingly, the serial killer I was speaking of is the son of Sam, David Berkowitz. He said that demons had spoken to him through a neighbour's dog, ordering him to kill women. So, yeah.
Yeah, well, he was a fruitcake. Mm. That's the proper psychological term.
I don't know if that is the proper psychological term, but yeah, okay.
Trust now, me, my dad's a doctor.
As someone with mental health conditions, I can confirm that actually, yes, fruitcake is the correct psychological term there.
Okay, right.
Yeah. See?
Staying in the US, Alistair, can you tell us about the ghost that has been photographed in a car in Florida?
Oh, yes, this one's actually all over the press at the moment. I spotted it on the Mail Online. I'm terribly sorry about that, but it's in other sources as well, such as The Sun, and I'm terribly sorry about that as well. Sometimes you find a story which comes with enough fruitcake to give everyone a slice, and this is one of the stories. Thank you.
Wow.
I've got to find a way.
Yeah, I mean, write that down. Yeah, so fruitcake, it's got selfie, it's got dead kids, it's got teenage beauty queens, it's got pushy parents of teenage beauty queens, and of course Florida. It's American, it's Florida, the state that keeps on giving. If you don't know already, Florida is to the United States as Norfolk is to the UK. Something weird happens in Florida, people not go, yep, that's Florida. Yeah, so what's this about?
You're just setting out to offend everyone.
Yeah, Florida and Norfolk together at last. Yeah, except one's got Disneyland and the other got some nice lakes. Yeah, got the Norfolk Broads. Yeah.
Don't try and redeem yourself now. Okay. Just get on with the story.
Sorry, Norfolk. Sorry. Nice it's holidays. Too late. I'm just going to be patronising to you now. Yeah. Okay, so what have we got? We got a bored teenager being driven by her mum to a beauty pageant in Florida. Takes a few selfies while she's sitting in the car, and in one of them there appears to be what looks like a small boy in the back seat of the car, partially obscured by her hair. It's a really good image. It really does look like a small boy, but that's where things go mad, because of course it's a ghost. Of course it is, because we are simple people, and Florida, they're simpler than most. And mum's decided that the small boy is the ghost of a kid who died on the same stretch of the road on the same date 1 year previously. So let's think about that, shall we? She's saying that this ghost of a boy sitting in the back seat of the car telling her daughter to buckle her seatbelt is a small boy who died a year ago in a car accident. So how's it feel like to be the parents of that kid? Hey, you know your boy who was killed in that accident last year. We saw his ghost. Aren't you pleased for me? I mean, she hasn't kept quiet about it. She's gone to all the news agencies. I mean, how do you think that feels? Riddle me this.
Yeah, it's a very good point. It's like with ghost hunters who go into places and say it's haunted by this person. There is some real debate around whether it's ethical for them to then release that information in their reports.
It's a close family member who was murdered recently, but we've been in contact with them, and here's what they say. That sort of rubbish, and it's terribly exploitative.
I think it's very just as exploitative of people like Sally Morgan and so on channeling dead children. I think it's just
I've mentioned before we've got Derek Okoro rolling into my hometown in March. I had half a mind to go, but I don't want to put £18 in his pocket.
He came to Edinburgh recently. I was going to go, but I forgot, I've got to be honest. But I was going to go, he was going to do a talk and kind of a meet-up and meet and greet. And I was like, yeah, I'm going to go and see this. I'm going to go. And then I kind of slept in and forgotten.
Yeah. I mean, knowing Fleet as I do, I'll probably get tutted out of town by people who almost nearly say something.
Yep.
But yeah, let's just get back. Let's get
back
to the story. Let's look at the photograph.
Your cage today, Alice. Yeah.
Just screaming at America still. Yeah. So we'll look at the photo itself. I mean, there's the link on the podcast homepage, of course, which Hayley will be putting up. Yes, it does look like a boy in the background. It because that's what your brain has taught you to think. It's a phenomenon that turns up time and time again on this podcast for a very good reason. We expect to see faces in things. We expect to see Hitler in a house in South Wales. That sort of thing. And this one looks a lot like a face, but it could, when you think logically about it, be something reflected in the window, combination of trees, skies, road, even somebody walking past. We don't know, because in their hurry to decide that it's a ghost, they've omitted all other details and all other context. I mean, is the car moving? What was the weather like? Was marsh gas passing in front of the planet Venus? Was a small boy walking past and reflected in the glass? Does mum think her precocious beauty queen daughter is a magnet for ghosts and other strange going on, just like every single spooky film about possessed teenagers you've ever seen? We know the answer to the last one, because it's yes. And the evidence for this is also on the Daily Mail link. Sorry about the Daily Mail link. I'm so sorry. It's a badly exposed photograph of a house with a pink lighting effect, because it was taken pointing into the sun. And of course that's a ghost. Of course it is. I'm still ranting. Look, I mean, mum even says she often has orbs to her next to her in pictures. No, that's because you're a terrible photographer.
No, I mean,
she has amazing orbs. She has amazing positive energy. So maybe spirits are attached to her. I think it's her personality being projected onto her, mum. So I'll just leave that one hanging there.
Well, firstly, orbs. You don't have to be a bad photographer to get orbs in photos. It's just airborne particles in front of the camera lens. And I'm going to disagree with you on this one. I don't think that's a reflection. I think it's an actual person in the photo. If you look really, really closely at the photo, you can see the head and you can see what looks to be like a grey jumper. And the sun coming in through the window is illuminating part of his face, or it could be a girl, and the grey jumper is partly illuminated too. And I think it's...
I mean, we can't discount the possibility that this is all a fantastic hoax.
I don't know.
Of course, I cannot say that for real, because there's libel laws and everything. But, yeah, I mean, it could equally be a small boy in the back of the car.
No, I don't think it equally could be. I think it's more likely to be a child in the back of the car than it is to be a reflection. I think that being a reflection would be really weird, because the window is... If you're sitting facing the front of the car, the window's on the right-hand side of the head. So for it to be a reflection, it would have to be coming from a non-reflective surface.
There's nowhere for it to reflect from.
I honestly think it's a small child back there, and either they're purposely saying there was no child there, or maybe they've forgotten that there was a child in the car, or they've convinced themselves.
Or ghosts exist.
Yeah, all ghosts exist. But this, I found this one quite interesting in a way, because it made me think of the, and I've seen a few people post it and say similar, that it reminds them of the vanishing hitchhiker folklore. Now, I live just outside of the city of Bath, and there's a well-known story of a vanishing hitchhiker nearby in an area of woodland called Sally in the Woods, where you drive through and allegedly the ghost appears in the back of your car. But in most instances, you pick somebody up. And then when you get to the destination, they're no longer in the car. And what you tend to find when the story is retold to somebody locally, they often go, somebody died in that area, and it was, you know, the hitchhiker died.
Doesn't virtually every locality have a story like
that?
Yeah,
exactly. And if you remember in an earlier episode of the Spooktator, we extensively covered this with taxi drivers picking up ghosts in an area devastated by a tsunami or...
That was one of mine, wasn't it? Yes.
Yeah, and it kind of reminded me of that, because they say that there was nobody in the back of the car, and then when they told somebody, they were told that someone had died in that location, and so it must be the ghost. So it kind of, to me, it had the same kind of pacing as a vanishing hitchhiker, only I genuinely think that there was a child in the back of the car, and they just...
Yeah, I do get the feeling from reading the article all the way through is that the mother's trying too hard here.
Yeah.
She's made it all about her, basically.
Yeah, they're talking about it being a guardian angel, so I think they're probably, maybe they're a religious family, and once the suggestion was made, they just kind of ran with it. And it's really easy, I think, to convince yourself that something has more meaning than it does. I mean, ghost hunters do it all the time. I used to do it when I was a ghost hunter. I think you know deep down that it was caused by something rational, but actually it gives you a better feeling if you can convince yourself that it wasn't something as mundane as a child. So you could go, oh yeah, there was a child in the back of the car, but it didn't look anything like that child in the photographs. It must be a ghost, you know. But we won't tell anybody there was a child in the back of the car, because I'll just say it was the child in the back of the car.
I mean, in this one, I mean, there's this thing about the child in the back of the car and the child that died a year ago, but they've produced no evidence to show what this child who died a year ago looks like, and I'll wager it doesn't look a thing like that half a face you got sitting behind her.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with you on that one.
Or if it does look exactly like that, that would be really sickeningly exploitative.
It would be...
But of course, they haven't done that because of laws of libel, act. Yep. And we don't do that because I haven't got any money, so don't sue me.
The mother is a journalist.
Is she?
Sorry, I'm just kind of doing some background snooping. The mother of the girl who's been taken a photo of is a journalist, internationally published author, shares ups and downs of life, reviews of pageants, concerts, sporting events. So, you know, this type of national press attention can't be doing her
any harm,
if I were to be cynical about the entire thing.
Yeah, I'm very cynical about this kind of story. I mean, the first thing I thought was, yes, I'm going to be cynical about this, yes.
Well, I think,
I'm going to be very cynical about this. I'll turn my cynicism up to 11.
If there's a motive, then obviously then you have to start to question what you're not being told. I mean, when I said that, you know, maybe they just forgot there was a child in the back of the car, I wasn't aware that she had maybe a reason to get her name out there in all the newspapers and so on. So,
well, it could be that the Mail Online journalist and all the other journalists subbed it to death just for space, and we're missing something vital. But I don't think that's the case.
Well,
here.
If that is, I'm sure time will tell. So.
Yeah, I mean, I write stories, and by the time the editors are finished with it, it doesn't make any sense at all.
Now, all of our stories this month seem to have an American connection, which is a huge coincidence. We didn't plan it that way. And next up, there's a restaurant in Wakefield in England that takes its entire theme from the Italian migration to New York. And they recently shared some interesting footage on their Facebook page, didn't they, Ash?
Yeah, this was quite good. It's CCTV footage. There's a woman at the bar, doesn't have a drink in hand. She's just chatting to the barman. And to the end, to the side of them, there's a tray of glasses. And at one point, the glass just kind of flies away from the others. And this is apparently one of many, many paranormal occurrences that have been happening in this place since it opened a few months ago, 3 months ago. So it's only just opened up. So, you know, rather nice little bit of publicity for them when they're a brand new restaurant. But they've apparently had quite a lot of goings on. Glasses tend to be thrown around quite a lot. Trays of glasses have been knocked over. This will convince you. One of the radios, one of their staff members was using, the screw went missing one day.
Damn. That proves it.
Yeah, the screw, it went missing.
You could almost say that the ghost was screwing with them. Boom.
Oh. Boom, boom. I'm very angry and upset at people have suggested that the glass flying away is just a result of it not being balanced properly. And, you know, I've worked in bars, that can happen. You know, I've worked in bars for years, and glasses will explode.
They do, don't they? Yeah. I've worked in a pub too. It might have been fresh out of the dishwasher, put on a cold tray, and air expands underneath it, and pop, it will fall over.
Boom, exactly. All sorts of things happen in pubs and bars all the time. Noises, things break, things crash, things burst. You know, there's a reason why pubs are considered to be haunted, because so much happens in them, because you've just got so many things that things can happen to.
Yeah.
I don't think there's particularly anything here. I mean, so many pubs claim to be haunted. And, you know, this is a relatively new place, opened 3 months ago. So obviously there's kind of an incentive there for getting a bit of publicity. And the press, getting ghost stories into the press is so easy to do. It's just a nice little easy thing to do. And it's now boosted attention, clearly. But I don't think there's anything particularly supernatural or paranormal here. And, you know, I don't think there's a great deal we can really say on the topic other than these things happen in pubs and there's not anything necessarily paranormal going on. I mean, the glass just fell over. It could have been balanced badly. As has been said, it could just have got out of the glass wash. I mean, those things get really hot. And when you take glasses out of there, the temperature of them is really, really hot.
Yeah.
So cooling down.
I mean, once again, there's no context to the incident. I mean, they're not saying how long the glasses had been there, any number of things. But I mean, there's always just a lack of explanation that could solve the whole mystery. But that's never mentioned.
To me, when I'm watching it, hang on, it's just stopped playing. Whoop, let me mute it. I'm watching it, and the glass that falls seems to be higher than the other glasses. So I wonder if that glass is balanced on top of the other glasses. It kind of just seems to it doesn't come out from where all the other glasses are. It seems to come off the top of the glasses.
Yeah, I mean, when glasses are piled up like that, especially if they have just been taken out of the glass wash, you know, they can be a bit higgledy-piggledy and, you know, at different angles and just kind of dumped on there. And so, yeah.
And you do get some glasses which are tall but still have the big heavy base to them, and when they're upside down like that, they become top heavy. So any vibration could actually send them over.
And
not
I
ghosts.
I think what's probably happened here is it's just happened. It's been caught on CCTV, and they've put it on their Facebook, and then it's just gained attention. And I think.
I do love the way that they invent a story to go around it. Like the last story, oh, it's the boy telling her to do up her seatbelt. In this one, it's, oh, it's an impatient ghost customer waiting for his drink. So, yeah, they'll invent a story around it that's got probably absolutely nothing to do with it.
Yeah, I think it's kind of what we do, though, isn't it, as humans? Something happens and we try and make sense of it, but we make sense of it in the context in which we're viewing it through. So if you're viewing this as it being a ghost, then you're like, oh, it's probably someone trying to get their attention. Whereas if you're viewing it as someone who's more sceptical, you're like, oh, it's probably just a glass falling over, to be honest.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, you could. It's also not something that'd be very difficult to fake either. You could easily cause a glass just to knock off, just by placing something under it. Just even by having a little bit of thread attached to it. If you wanted to fake it, of course, I'm not saying they have, but if you wanted to, you know, there's all sorts of ways you could do it.
Tiny little air bulb underneath it, thunk. The camera release, easy.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, they could have faked it falling. I don't think they did. I doubt they did. I think most likely is they've come across a really interesting video that's naturally occurring, and it's given them something to talk about. It's created a little bit of attention for them. And, you know, they're in a new place. You can't really blame them to a lot, to some degree.
A bit of local buzz accidentally went national, so well done,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, exactly. Nice little bit of marketing there, but I think the only spirits that are in that bar are overpriced.
That's the New York Italian Kitchen Restaurant in Wakefield, open from 11:30 to 2:30 for lunch and 5 to 10 for dinner.
I would say they're possibly very reasonably priced. Let's give them the benefit of the doubt. Yeah.
I was just kind of assuming, you know, I was going to say overpriced compared to the freeness of ghost spirits, you know. although, you know, the rising price of drinks these days, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if a short costs at least £2.20.
If you voted Brexit on June the 23rd, you voted for that.
This is what happened. Welcome to Trump's America.
It's Wakefield.
It will be.
The ripple effect.
Yeah. It's going to build a wall between Scotland and England.
Or just fix the old one.
So, elsewhere, Arno Delorme, a researcher with affiliations at the University of California, San Diego, and the Institute of Noetic Sciences, recently published a paper titled Prediction of Mortality Based on Facial Characteristics, and the paper claims that people can sense whether someone is dead or not after briefly looking at a photo of them. The paper was published in the journal called Frontiers in Human Neuroscience in May of this year, 2016, but was officially retracted in October. The retraction from the journal reads that, and I quote, "Following publication, concerns were raised regarding the scientific validity of the article. The chief editors subsequently concluded that aspects of the paper's findings and assertions were not sufficiently matched by the level of verifiable evidence presented." End quote. Now,
that's editorialese for "this was complete bollocks and we're sorry we published it."
Yeah, pretty much. Now, the authors of this paper don't agree with this retraction. And many people are saying that this is a form of censorship and they're getting quite outraged. But let me just take a moment to calmly tell you why this is not censorship, okay? Bad science being retracted from a journal is not censorship. There we go, we can move on. But it's a sign that you need to do science better. And
yeah, are you listening, Andrew Wakefield?
Yeah, looking at something and saying, no, this is wrong, we need to take it back, we're sorry we post it, is not censorship. Censorship would be the government breaking down these researchers' doors, arresting them, putting them in prison, and saying you can never again talk about your psychic scientific research. That would be censorship. Pulling a fucking article is not censorship.
That's an extreme example of what censorship would be. I'm going to touch upon that in a moment. But looking at the research in this paper, in this research, I can't even tell how the study got published in the first place, which I think is a bigger problem with many journals who have reviewing processes that leave a lot to be desired. I think that's the bigger problem here, is how did this research get published in the first place? And the study basically had 12 people who claimed to be mediums and got them to look at over 400 photos. And using their alleged abilities, they had to determine whether the person in the photo was dead or alive. There was a third option in that they could say, "I don't know." But according to the Neurocritic blog, the "do not know" responses were not included in the analysis. And so there's no way of knowing how many of those responses were recorded or used during the testing. And that's an alarm. That rings an alarm bell, because data is important, so all the data should have been presented, not just, you know, the positives or negatives. The in-between bits should have been published too.
Yeah, that's one of the things that Ben Goldacre goes on about a lot when he's discussing medical tests and testing of drugs, that sometimes even major companies will hide data that doesn't suit their results simply by saying it wasn't relevant, but all data is relevant in these tests, and and things get passed because data has been hidden.
Well, I've also, there's another issue I've just kind of noticed. The pictures were all from 1939 to 41 and from 62 to 68. Now, they said they turned them black and white to hide which era they're from, but colour scheme of a photo aside, there are other things that can give away what era a picture is from.
Well, this is one of the problems, because 90% of the people in the photos are dead. So if you just guessed dead, then
you will get 90% correct. Exactly. Yes, and that's going to be higher than probability.
You'd be better getting 400 images of modern people, 200 are dead, 200 are alive, so they're all in the same era, all in the same setting, and there's either or, but 90% of people from the 30s. It's
like members of our national press using that Microsoft age guessing game that's on the net to guess the age of refugees. I mean, it's using something that everybody knows is duff to prove something that they want to say is real, and it's just doesn't work.
Now, the 12 participants in this study had 8 seconds to look at each photo, and they were successful 53.8% of the time, which is marginally better than chance. And these 12 people...
Not as good as 90%, though.
No, but these 12 people who claimed to be mediums were wrong 46% of the time, which is pretty crap for people who say they have these extrasensory abilities. If you think about it. And these are people who work. I think there was a stipulation that people taking part had to be working mediums and had to, you know, do readings for clients. So they were wrong 46% of the time, which should really worry anybody who's given them money for a reading.
Yeah, well, the spirit guide's got to go off, look at the picture, go off and find if this person's actually on the spirit side or not, and then come back. I mean, 8 seconds is too long for that kind of thing. Think about the poor spirit guides. Think about Sam.
Well, they actually said that they were able to detect vibrancy from the photos. So it wasn't to do with their spirit guides. It was to do with them being able In the abstract of the now retracted paper, the authors say, our results support the claim of individuals who report that some as yet unknown features of the face predict mortality. The results are also compatible, they say, with claims about clairvoyance, warranting further investigation. And I hate to do the whole predictable skeptic routine here, but this is bullshit. Because firstly, there was no control group used. And so the only input into the study was from people who already claimed to have supernatural abilities. And if they had used a control group of people who do not claim that they have these abilities, this would have informed us all of what level of accuracy just guessing if a person is dead or alive would produce. So there's no way to accurately conclude the results were caused by participants because of their mediumship abilities. If you think about it, if you have two options, when you're looking at a photo, if you have two options, that person's dead or alive, and you have to guess each time, it's pretty likely that you're going to get at least half of your guesses correct.
It's also that brings up concerns about the lack of rigour in so-called respectable journals. A few years ago, there were criticisms of some journals affiliated to Christian organisations that would publish so-called scientific investigations into evolution to disprove it and promote creationism. But they get published in a journal, and once it's in a journal, it's official, and then people can then use it as their research to prove their point of view, when of course it's complete cobblers.
But with this research, if you think about it, you've got dead or alive. There are three options, but two of them, you know, dead or alive, are correct. So there are better odds in that guessing game than, say, guessing Xena cards, where there are five potential choices to begin with. So what we're essentially saying is that being a medium enables you to be correct in 3% more instances of working out if someone's alive or dead, which is hardly amazing when you think about it.
So also, though, it's kind of something that's kind of bugging me a little bit since you mentioned it. 90% of the images were of dead people, but the article says that 53.8% was slightly better than chance. How is that slightly better than chance if 90% of the pictures were dead people.
Because they weren't trying to work
50-50.
Out. Well, that's the problem. But what they were doing was they were trying to detect if the person was dead or alive, and the participants guessed correctly 53%.
I see that. I just don't see how that's. This isn't a 50-50, though, is it? Because 90% of those images were of dead people, so...
Well, no, exactly. And it's the same problem with the Xena cards. So, you know, you've got, say, how many cards are there in a pack of Xena cards?
Five lots of five, usually.
So, yeah, so you've got 25 cards. You hold one card up and it's a circle. Now you've only got four circles left in the pack. So it's the same problem there, because it's not equally possible, you know, it's not equally likely to... that you're going to get a circle as many times as you would a star, you know. So it's the same kind of problem that kind of plagued those sorts of research too. But what really kind of bugged me about this was that people were so outraged that these researchers had been censored, and we shouldn't be concerned about, we should be concerned about censorship in every part of society, especially academic research. But sometimes a retraction is just an indication that the research is not good enough. And it kind of annoyed me, because in 2011, social psychologist Daryl Bem got published in the Journal of Personality and Social Psychology with a paper called Feeling the Future, in which it was claimed that 9 studies demonstrated that participants could reliably predict future events using ESP. And there were lots of issues with the research. There were lots of methodological issues with the research. And when it was replicated, it was like perfectly replicated. They didn't change anything. By Stuart Ritchie, Richard Wiseman and Chris French, their results were quite different. They didn't get the positive results. And when they submitted their findings to the same journal, the editor refused to publish the replication. Where was the uproar from proponents of paranormal claims about this form? This refusal to publish, they were very quiet about this, and I think that's quite indicative. And I think it's actually, I find it almost hypocritical that people worry about censorship when it affects something that seems to back up their opinions, but when it's about research that says actually these findings, you know, in Bem's case, these findings have not been replicated, there is absolute radio silence from people.
Once again, we're returning to a lack of rigour in so-called scientific journals, where they refuse to publish things that go against their set out point
it's
of view.
It's not even, the JPS, the Journal of Personality and Social Psychology, is a well-respected journal. But there was, from the people who believe in psychic phenomena, who would quote Bem's research, when it wasn't replicated and the journal refused to publish that replication, there was very little uproar from them about censorship. But when TED removed a talk from Rupert Sheldrake about something that was inaccurate and misleading, there was complete uproar. And it just seems to me that people who believe in psychic phenomena, who are claiming that this retraction of this paper about the photographs and detecting whether the person in the photo is dead or not, people who are saying this is censorship, who didn't speak up in those other instances, I think they should ask themselves why exactly. I don't think it's because they care about scientific research.
Exactly. Replicating and replication of experiments is a very important part of this sort of thing. It's all very well publishing a paper based on one study or one set of experiments, but people would then have to try and replicate it themselves just to prove that what's set out in the first time. And if people were refusing to publish replicated data, then they really aren't doing it right.
No, exactly. But even in the case of this research with the photographs, they didn't have control groups in place. There was no double blind control in place. So actually, there would be no point really in replicating that, I don't think. But yeah, I think replication is really important. And also the fact that people who had said, I don't know, as the third option, that data wasn't included in the study. And, you know, cherry picking your data is a big problem in all research, including parapsychology. And I think it's really admirable that Dr. Caroline Watt has created a register on which parapsychologists can register the research that they're going to do. And then when the research is done, they publish their findings there. And if there's any data that hasn't been shown, then it shows up because they had already registered, pre-registered, what they were going to do. And that's a way of making parapsychology research transparent. And I think a lot of people could probably take a leaf out of her book.
It, just reading over this report of it, it does make you wonder how in the hell it got published in the first place, because it just comes across as so badly put together and so badly constructed. And, you know, I think we from a skeptical point of view, I want to say as well, I'm not rooting for these things to fail. I'm not sat here going, I hope these things aren't right, because I would love them to be right. I've spoken to many skeptics about this, and, you know, I've had a few, you know, a few have said, you know, if the paranormal was proven to be true in the first instant, they'd be a little bit like, oh, this is annoying, you know, it kind of undoes a lot of my life's work, but would then, you know, accept the conclusions. And I think that's the issue. We would accept the conclusions. It's not that we're going out of our way to try and cover things up or to try and discredit things. For many skeptics, we want this stuff to be true, even more so than many believers do, because it would just be so awesome if it was true. So when people kind of shout out that skeptics are just cynics and we're just trying to shut down discussion and we're trying to censor, but it's not that at all. In many instances, we would love this stuff to be true, but we want it to be proven beyond any shadow of a doubt.
And I think also that there is a mentality. There are two mentalities that one can take. It's one of them is to say, why is science out to get me and what I believe in? And the other mentality that you can hold is that, you know, and I think many parapsychologists who do good research agree that the only way that any progress can be made in parapsychology or in psychical research is for people to invest in an understanding of the scientific process and to keep improving the research. But some people would rather put so much faith in 3.8%, you know, which is marginally better than chance. You know, those people who claim to be mediums in this research, they got it right 53.8% of the time. So that's 3.8% that people are putting so much faith in. And then when it gets retracted, they get outraged. Is that really the best you can do? Is that the best that you can hope for? 3.8%? Really?
People like science when it supports their worldview. And when it doesn't, it angers them, which is why you get a lot of people backlashing against evolution, but will cling on to intelligent design because it's a type of science that supports their viewpoint, even though it's completely back to the fruitcake.
And why you get a president of the United States who says that climate change was invented by China, because it suits him to believe that.
I reckon that he once bought a thermometer that had made in China on the back, and he's just confused himself completely.
Yeah.
Now, does anybody have anything to plug?
Yeah. I've got my Facebook page, Angry People in Local Newspapers. It's very popular, it turns out. Just go into Facebook, type in Angry People in Local Newspapers, and you will get pictures of angry people in local newspapers and people being humorous and sarcastic underneath that.
1st of December I'm in Teesside, and on the 7th of December I'm in Greenwich. Both of those are 7:30 times. You can find out venues on my website, ashprice.co.uk. It's Price with a Y. And I'm doing How to Be a Psychic Con Man, which is a comedy magic show looking at supernatural scams. So I'll teach you how to bend metal, move objects with your mind, read thoughts, and perform psychic surgery.
On the 8th of December at Conway Hall in London, Centre for Inquiry UK are hosting an event called A Sea of Lies, The Media, Politicians and Post-Truth Culture. And it will feature Martin Robbins, Marcus Chown and Natalie Fenton talking about whether we've lost sight of the truth and how the media shaped the political agenda by means of spin and deceit and lies. And it sounds very depressing, but I think it's going to be a great event. And you can find that at humanism.org.uk. Now, to close the show out is a new segment that we hope can become a semi-regular feature. I'm pleased to introduce you to the Spooktator Field Report. This month, we sent Charlie off to Chicago, Illinois, especially to investigate the infamously haunted Bachelor's Grove Cemetery. He was joined by John, and here is his field report. So, this is goodbye from me, and remember, spooky is in the eye of the beholder. Cue that funky field report jazz music.
Okay, here we are in Bachelor Grove Woods on the south side of Chicago. It is November 3rd? November 3rd, and I am going in search of Bachelor's Grove Cemetery with my good friend John, and we are just, it's a beautiful day in the autumn. We're in a somewhat spooky little woodland in search of what is rumoured to be the most haunted cemetery in the world. We will see how it goes. It's quite a legendary place actually, with all kinds of stories about various ghosts, which are some of the strangest I've ever heard of. There is a ghost horse, which apparently leaps out of a small lake that's on the grounds of the cemetery. There was a very, very famous photograph of a ghost sitting on a grave there. And there is a two-headed man, there is a farm which disappears, and some kind of unknown creature which is supposed to stalk around the place at night. Hopefully we won't run into anything too frightening today. Okay, we are currently in Bachelor Grove Cemetery itself. It's quite a small space. Chicago has some very large historic cemeteries, and this is roughly about an acre. Over the years, especially in most recent years, there has been a lot of vandalism to the headstones here, and there are very few of them actually intact now. It's part of the remoteness of the forest has meant that it's just become a popular site for people just to cause some kind of mayhem, especially in the past where there's actually cases of graves being unearthed and even bones being scattered about. You might be able to just hear the road in the distance, so it's not completely remote, but it's actually a really lovely little space here. Lots of headstones, lots of them in ruins. There's some very famous ones around here that have been involved in ghost photographs and things like that. I did just think that I saw something in the just beyond the fence, and I'm not joking. It probably was just a person though. But that did give me a little bit of a chill. There is something a little bit spooky about the place, do you think?
It's a quite a beautiful day, but there's something extra still.
Yes, there is, and it's most likely just because you hear stories about the place, but there is something about just a graveyard in the middle of the woods, which is can be a little bit jarring. We're heading towards the lake, which is at the lower end of the cemetery. Oh, it's quite big actually, compared to what I was imagining it to be. Now, the story around here is that a farmer was pulled into the lake by his horse that was pulling a plough, and he drowned along with it. And apparently you can see the horse either coming in or out of the water occasionally. Oh, have you seen this, John? This what I have here is the gravestone of, and it says infant daughter. It's a mystery. No one actually knows who she is. And there are gifts brought to her various times of the year. And at this time, I can see some princess shoes, some little stuffed dogs. There is Jolly Ranchers, which is a type of American candy. And there's a pumpkin, because we're obviously just after Halloween. Okay, and like I was saying, did you hear that again? Other voices from there. Did you hear something? Yeah. It's like a man's voice. Can you still hear something? Probably another bunch of people recording a podcast. Yes, it was the same location. We were. Oh, there we go. Yeah, it's like someone shouting. Oh God, Jesus Christ! There's a bunch of people who've just walked into the cemetery and just frightened the life out of me.
Almost like they appeared out of nowhere.
Yes. Okay, well, I think that might have been the biggest shock for the day. And yeah, I think that might have be it for Bachelor Grove, I think.
I think that's pretty incontrovertible evidence as to the existence of ghosts, and I shall be awaiting for my $1 million from the JUF. Okay, perhaps not. But we did definitely hear some strange sounds from the woods, which, though they seemed to come from a different location to where the visitors arrived, it was almost certainly them. If nothing else, this proved to me how disorientating woodlands can be, and that even the sceptically minded can want to believe so much that poor evidence can seem like concrete evidence at the time, and that nobody is infallible to suggestion. As for seeing the brief glimpse of what seems like it could have been a misty human figure among the trees, I could put it down to a ghost, though it's much more likely to be a product of my slightly hungover mind. The local baseball team, the Cubs, ended their 108-year drought of winning the World Series the night before, and I'd been up celebrating in the streets until an unreasonable hour. Oh well, better luck next time. Though if you do ever get the chance to, I highly recommend a visit to the beguiling and beautiful Bachelor's Grove Cemetery. You may not encounter a ghost, but I guarantee an unforgettable experience. Thanks very much for listening.